All right. Nice and clear. Okay. Myrna Kostash has been a prolific and passionate literary voice in Canada for the past four decades. Her works include books of creative nonfiction, plays and articles. Over the course of her writing career, she has been very active in the development of the literary arts in Canada. She's a founding member of the Periodical Writers Association of Canada, the Writers Guild of Alberta, and the Creative Nonfiction Collective. Myrna has received many awards for her writing, most recently this year's Matt Cohen Award for Lifetime Achievement in Writing. Ukrainian Canadians, of course, know her best for her book, All of Baba's Children, which was published in 1978 and has never gone out of print. In addition to her works on politics, feminism, and other mainstream topics, she's continued to write books about her Ukrainian heritage, or perhaps more accurately, her explorations of it. Her most recent release is Prodigal Daughter, A Journey to Byzantium by the University of Alberta Press, which is in bookstores now. Just back from a book tour on the prairies, she has graciously agreed to an interview even before recovering from jet lag. Thanks so much for joining us, Myrna. I hope you're rested a wee bit.
I actually am. Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Oh, great. Well, I'm just so glad that you're with us. And congratulations on receiving the Matt Cohen Award.
Thank you. That was very moving for me, actually, because I knew Matt.
Oh.
Way back when I first arrived in Toronto to do my master's degree at the University of Toronto, he was the only name I had sort of clutched in on a little piece of paper from mutual friends in Edmonton. And he wasn't a writer at that point. I wasn't a writer, but we eventually both became writers and we were buddies. Oh. Until I moved it back to Edmonton, and then our contact was sporadic. But it meant a lot to me to receive an award in his name.
Oh, that's great. Well, and certainly well-deserved a lifetime achievement. You certainly have done that. I was really intrigued and fascinated by the topic of this book, Prodigal Daughter. And, of course, I devoured all of Baba's Children shortly after you wrote it. Absolutely devoured it, Myrna. Mm. And I followed your writing career over the years. And how I came to see you as a fellow Ukrainian-Canadian was very political, left-wing political, of course, and pretty much anti-religion. And I found that was reflected in your work over the years. Now you've found religion, and I'm going to come back to that. But first, a question I've been dying to ask for years. How did a nice Ukrainian girl from Two Hills, Alberta, become such a political firebrand?
I wasn't from Two Hills. I grew up in Edmonton. I was born, grew up in Edmonton. Two Hills was the place I picked to do the research for All of Baba's Children.
Oh.
I picked it because in my naivety at the time, I had just come back from 10 years away from Alberta to do this book. I wanted a place where there had never been any Kostashes. So no Kostash had ever lived or worked in Two Hills. So I thought that I would be anonymous. Little did I realize how these prairie towns and these ethnic communities actually work, because as soon as I said my name, people said, oh, Kostash, who's Kostash? Bill, Elias, you know, Harry, whatever. And of course, what it was is that my uncles had all taught in the area, Harry Hill and Smoky Lake, Willingdon, Andrew, and an uncle farmed at Royal Park. So of course, the family is extremely well known. And I was welcomed into people's homes as a result. This turned out to be a double-edged sword, however, because when the book finally came out, as you can imagine, there were some people who were not at all happy with my interpretation of the information they had given me. And so there was a bit of a backlash that we welcomed you into our home. We knew your family, and look what you say about us. Look how you treat us.
Okay, so and you're talking about like the politics that you injected.
Yeah. But by the same token, I discovered that there were other Ukrainian Canadians who admired me in the book for exactly that reason. Thank you for telling us telling our story.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very much aware, conscious of the fact that when I was working on the material, that I was trying to write a perspective on Ukrainian-Canadian history from my generation. And most of the books, indeed I think all of the books that I read at the time, had come from either a pioneer generation or my parents, who were the first ones born in Canada, and I was the next generation, and I was free psychologically as well as politically, to examine our history, you know, warts and all.
I remember thinking that when I read it. Oh, great, somebody from my generation. Somebody, you know, it was fresh. And not only did that, you were, you know, from the same generation. I'm a little bit younger than you, but not that much. So we're from the same generation, mm-hmm. boomers.
Right.
But the stories were, like you said, you know, they weren't the pioneer. The kind of set. It was very fresh and contemporary.
I'm glad you noticed that, because I had, you know, separated myself from the community, for at least the previous 10 years. And I was, you know, in the throes of the 60s, right, in the student movement and the women's movement. And when I came back to Alberta to do the research, I really didn't think I was going to stay. I thought I was going to come and do the research, go back to Toronto and resume my cosmopolitan life. And I never did, because when the book came out, I was claimed, you know, by people, whether they liked the book or hated it. They claimed me as one of theirs, right? Mm-hmm. And I found this very, very moving. And I can't really explain why, for example, I even chose to do that particular book. I still can't answer why, for my first book, I picked up and, you know, left Toronto in order to go and hang out. I lived in Two Hills in a motel for 3 months, right, to do these stories. And when I hadn't shown the least bit interest or inclination toward them for the previous decade, right?
Yeah.
Now that I can look back as you say, almost four decades and several books exploring this Ukrainian identity, I can see that it was the beginning of an obsession, if you like. And I've never let it go. And each, you know, as I evolve through identity questions as a Ukrainian Canadian, I bring out a new book, right? So All mm-hmm. of Baba's Children is me at a very sort of rough, raw, quite naive position vis-a-vis what I would learn later mm-hmm. about us, right? And I was challenged then to go to Ukraine, or as people say, well, when are you going to go back? Of course, we'd never been.
Yeah.
So when are you going to go back to Ukraine and tell the Ukrainian story? Well, I eventually did that in the book Bloodlines. Mm-hmm. I had many other, you know, purposes mm-hmm. for that book as well, but one of them was to find the connection between being a Ukrainian Canadian and a Ukrainian and the history of Ukraine. And that in turn has produced a Prodigal Daughter, because in trying to understand who we were, who, you know, in sort of the deep history and the ethnicity and politics of Ukraine, I understood that underneath all of that is this original bedrock of Byzantium. We are who we are as Ukrainians, at least those of us who are, well, certainly those of us who were raised in the Orthodox Church, but even so, even the Ukrainian Catholics have their origin in Byzantium and Cyrillic alphabet, for example. And that whole question of being in the East, that there's this border that divides Europe between East and West. It's a very old border. It was laid down in the Roman Empire. And so the sense that by being in the East, we are eventually going to find ourselves in Constantinople, mm-hmm. you know, Tsarigrad, right? Mm-hmm. Became the impetus for Prodigal Daughter.
Mm-hmm. So All of Baba's Children was very, very successful, of course. It, as you say, you know, we claimed you and you found your writer's identity, although you did a lot of mainstream stuff as well, and certainly, you know, made your mark in the mainstream literary circles in Canada. But I remember you came to Vancouver.
Hello?
You okay?
Yeah, I was just adjusting my headset here.
Okay.
It keeps slipping down my head.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just going to hang on to it. Okay.
Okay, no worries. I can cut this part out. So are you comfortable?
Yeah.
Okay. So I remember a few years back, about 4 or 5 years ago, you came to Vancouver. There was an academic literary symposium of sorts here. And you were on a panel with people like Yaris Balan and Helena Hren and Askold Lozinski, I think it was Askold. Anyways,
Askold Melnichuk.
Melnichuk, okay, that's right. And
Janice Kulik-Kiefer.
And Janice Kulik-Kiefer, that's right. And
Irene Sabitko. Sorry,
yeah,
I remember
of course,
this
yeah,
perfectly.
Irene, yeah.
What it was. It was a panel that took place within something called the AWP conference.
That's right.
Yeah, which is a literary organization in the United States, and they were having their first conference outside of the States. So there we were, the representative Ukrainian Canadians.
And Irene, she organized that whole thing.
Indeed, she did.
Yes, yeah. And she wanted that kind of the Ukrainian literary element in this conference. And I remember you talking about how all of Baba's children, while you appreciated what it had done for you, it was kind of a bit of an albatross around your neck because it sort of marked you for a certain type of writing.
Indeed.
Yeah, yeah. And
you want me to say something about that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, writers are cursed by their first books, right? that, you know, we go on, we evolve, we develop, we go on to have new interests, but people remember us for the book that made an impression on them. I don't regret for a minute or complain for a minute about the fact that all of Baba's children went viral, as we can say now. And there are people who are still reading it, a new generation that is reading it. But it has represented or felt to me a bit of an albatross in that, heavens, it was my first book, right? I've written 10, and more to the point, I really evolved you know, stylistically, and I think you would agree that, that by when you get to A Prodigal Daughter, you've got a very different voice speaking to, narrating to in that book than in all of Baba's Children. So, I would just wish that I had taken along all those readers of all of Baba's Children through my next books, especially Bloodlines, which for me was my first genuine creative nonfiction book. I really made a breakthrough there. In a literary way, and it does answer the question that people challenged me with. Well, what about Ukraine? I really took that very seriously. So I would, direct your readers to your listeners to Bloodlines, A Journey to Eastern Europe, as a midway point, as I say, between Two Hills and Byzantium. If they want to know how I got from Two Hills to Byzantium, that's the book that will tell them.
And it's still available, isn't it, for purchase?
Oh, Bloodlines? Yeah. Well, you can get it on Amazon.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Great. So I remember you saying that you feared for your politics.
Mm-hmm.
So what I have to ask you, I mean, how are you, you're sort of, you found religion again.
Well, it's an odd way of putting it. I wouldn't say I found religion. I'd say I found myself back in the church.
You did. Okay.
It's kind of a slightly different issue.
Okay. So you consider yourself then like a born again Ukrainian Orthodox?
I guess, I suppose so. I certainly, when you've read Prodigal Daughter, you know that there have been twists and turns for me. It took 10 years for this book to come to completion. So over a 10-year period, much can happen. Mm-hmm. And if I had written the book and published it 2 or 3 years after I began it, I would never have got to the place where I got. When you get to Prodigal Daughter, you'll see that I've opened myself to that question of the relationship now between a person and the idea of divinity or transcendence of some sort. And when I accepted that was the journey I was on, I thought, well, why would I reinvent the wheel by going to any other faith community, if you like? Why not go to the one that I was baptized into and spent my childhood in? And I have to say that even though when I was making all those other journeys, political ones, ones concerned about history and politics and culture, I was very, very drawn to Orthodox churches wherever I, found myself. And I spent several winters in Greece, for example, in the 1980s. And I would just go to the services knowing that there was something there that was important to me without being able to articulate it or pursue it. So that it wasn't that much of a shock to me that it turned out that my investigations into a journey to Byzantium in the company of a particular saint who I was just sort of academically interested in at the beginning turned out to be my companion on a journey back to the church. Now, getting into the church and then sort of trying to understand its teachings and catching up on, almost 2,000 years of literature is another issue. And that's the path I'm on now, is one in which I'm trying to learn to be Orthodox and you know, trying to be Orthodox.
So I was wondering, because you were so strongly political in your earlier years, and how do you and a very strong feminist and great role model for many, how do you reconcile that your political and feminist past now with your newer, your renewed faith?
Well, I'm still a feminist and a socialist. I mean, you don't.
Good for you.
I mean, this is kind of my point, Paulette, is that we are constructed of layer upon layer of identity. And little did I know that by going down into the matrix of Ukrainian-Canadian or Ukrainian culture and Ukrainian identity, the matrix which is Byzantium historically, that I was actually also going down into the basic layer of myself, mm-hmm. my own person, right? So these were actually comparable journeys, and you don't leave behind the other identities. You know, they're still there with you. The question that's raised for me, both I raise it myself, and I've been questioned about it, is how can you, as a socialist feminist, you know, how can you? What are you doing in the Orthodox Church, right, of all churches, right? And it is a very good question, because I'm very, very aware of the fact that even Catholic, in some ways, the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, has come to grips with, or, you know, is grappling with questions having to do with gender and the role of women in the church that the Orthodox Church has barely, you know, made a bleat about.
Yeah.
I mean, there are reasons for that, and I understand them, but... my first answer to you and to others who might ask the same question is that once I decided I wanted to deepen my journey spiritually, and I decided on the Orthodox Church, that I found myself in an incredibly rich place. If you think of how old that church is, and
sure.
It's a kind of archive of Christian thought and belief and art and archaeology. It's never forgotten its own past, which you can't say for the Western churches. They've cut themselves off from, the Roman Church has cut itself off from 1,000 years of its...
Indeed.
Yeah. Its history that it shared with the Eastern Church, and the Protestants are even more recent. So I find that very, very... well, it's moving and it's challenging and it's exciting. So that's one reason. The second answer I have is that, you know, if I want to, save the woodland caribou of Alberta, or I want to protest the trafficking and sexual trafficking of women in Canada, or any other number of social political issues, I know where to go. You know, there's Greenpeace, there's CBC, or, you know, Friends of CBC, or there's NDP, or whatever. I mean, there are these interest groups and these action groups out there, but they don't answer the question that the church is there to at least attempt to answer. Why am I here? Is there a soul? What is the face of God, or whatever these questions that are raised, you know, within theology, these socialism and feminism isn't particularly concerned with that. So I sort of round out everything. I go to church. And it's interesting, when you make a practice of it, how it changes your sense of what time is in the sense of how we spend our time.
Right.
So now when I think of Sundays, I think of it as a place where I'm going to go to this other world. I'm going to step through the doors of St. Elias Ukrainian Orthodox Church and just enter this other world. Whereas everyone around me is, I don't know, jogging or reading the papers or doing the laundry or something like that. And I find it very precious to have a particular time of the week that gets set aside for this.
Wow.
So I don't know whether that makes me born again, but it certainly makes me on a journey, and it's a struggle. And I have to say that I have volunteered to serve on the Revived Gender Issues Committee.
You would.
Yes, Ukrainian Orthodox Church of Canada, because I have also learned that there has been discussion internationally among Orthodox people, including and especially women, on this entire question. So we just haven't had it much publicized here, but it's definitely been going on. And I was in New York earlier this week, and I went to a conference of something called the Sophia Institute. And it's an institute dedicated to the study of Eastern Christianity. And its conference last year was all about women. So it's out there, and I'm going to find it.
I have no doubt that you will, Myrna.
And there will be another book, I'm sure, about all that.
Well, okay, so will you – when we talked just before we started the interview, you had said that you're going to be on the West Coast, and that answers my next question here. So you will be here on the island for a little while.
Yeah, I'm going to be house-sitting in Qualicum Beach from December 28 to January 26. Now, I already have an event that's going to be taking place in Victoria, January 21st, at the university under the auspices of the Ukrainian Studies Program, Professor Sirhi Yakilchuk.
Awesome.
That name might be familiar to some of your listeners. Mm-hmm. So they have a seminar series, as I understand it, guest speakers. So I'm going to be their guest speaker and reading from the book and talking about it on January 21st.
Awesome.
Beyond that, I haven't made any arrangements. I'm actually trying to be quiet and get some reading done.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe I'll see if I can snag you in for something in Nanaimo, perhaps.
Nanaimo would be great, because, I have friends there, and yes, I know there's – well, for example, I was in Nanaimo a little bit over a year ago trying to find evidence in the archives of information that I had read somewhere else that the oldest Ukrainian organization in Canada was formed in Nanaimo. 1907, and it was a socialist workers' party. This is like way before the churches, right?
No kidding, yeah.
And
I
figured they were coal miners, right? That's why they would be there. And I went into the city of Nanaimo archives to try to find some evidence of this organization. They had nothing. And I realized I'd probably have to go to some Ukrainian language archive. But I did find in the socialist newspaper, the English language socialist newspaper of that time, a reference to what was called a Viola Hall that was the socialists rented out, right? And we couldn't find any evidence of that in old telephone books or gazetteers either until I realized as I left the museum, it wasn't Viola, it was Volia. It could only have been Volia, right?
Yes, so I'm, freedom, I'm, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm sending an appeal out there. If anybody actually knows the history or has some archival information about Volia Hall, I'd be pleased to have it, because this is all part of my next book project.
Wow. Well, before you're on to that one, we should continue to talk about this one, and its copies are available now.
Yes.
You said, and through Chapters Indigo.
Well, I'm not sure about Chapters, to tell you the truth. Your better bet is your local independent bookstore, or just go straight to the website of the publisher.
Okay.
Order from there.
Okay, and that'll be up on the Nash Holis blog if anybody needs to find it. But it is the University of Alberta Press, and it's
yes.
People can also just Google you, right?
Exactly.
Myrna Kostash, yeah. And there'll be a link there. So awesome.
Exactly.
Okay, so then more news for when you'll be in Victoria January 21st, mm-hmm. And so we'll get the news for that, and next month we'll be publicizing that, and hopefully you'll come to Nanaimo and people in Vancouver.
I was in Vancouver for the International Literary Festival, and I had a couple of opportunities there to present the book.
Oh, you did? Okay.
So that was in end of October, I think.
Okay.
So I just want to say something about Prodigal Daughter as the kind of book it is, so people aren't misled. It's called a creative nonfiction for a reason. Creative nonfiction are those books that are described as part this, part that, part that, part this, right? That's exactly what Prodigal Daughters is. Part travelogue, it's part memoir, it's part reportage, it's part history, art history, part theology. It's got all of those elements to it. But what's uniting it, what's sort of the narrative of it all, is that I start off on a journey to try to understand Byzantium from a Slav perspective, because as we were Christianized and brought into Byzantium, mm-hmm. through my relationship, if you can put it that way, with a particular saint, Saint Demetrius of Thessalonica, who we know as Sv. Dmitry Solunsky. Very, very pivotal figure for me, because he was both a hero for the Greeks and a saint that we would eventually venerate ourselves. And so that's where I started, and I began by traveling through the Balkans, just collecting whatever I could find out about him and about the history of Byzantines and the Slavs. But, of course, all kinds of other things got woven into that, as I say, you know. Mm-hmm. Current affairs and my own reflections and interviews with people. And
it is a very rich book, Myrna, and it's a fabulous book. It's not one you can just kind of sit and whip through, because you've got to think about what you're writing is you go really deep into your side and really into yourself, and I really admire that. And I was struck, especially in the first part where it's, you know, sort of the prologue,
yes,
where you kind of just setting the stage, and many times I just laughed out loud. I mean, some of the stuff that you came up with, you know, taking yourself so seriously in the 60s, I remember those days, and you just talked about going and this solemn ritual of getting stoned, you know.
Yeah, throwing the coins for the I Ching.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then at the very, very, very serious, and at the end, solemn ritual of getting stoned. And you made it quite a few like that. We're very, 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 you could tell, like, there's a saying for writers that, you know, you just, it's easy. All you have to do is sit down, open a vein. And uh-huh. I think if, you know, any writing can be personified, you know, that could speak to any writing, certainly is what I've read in your book, Prodigal Daughter, and of course, you know, earlier too, I think, but more so this one, All of Baba's Children was also there. Was you pour yourself into your writing?
But, yes, but I wasn't there as a person. I mean, there was no first person there.
Not well. A little bit, but it wasn't quite so. It wasn't quite so. Yeah, it wasn't as mature.
It wasn't creative nonfiction yet. It was what I call the new journalism. I wrote from within new journalism when I wrote All of Baba's Children. Okay. And really, very briefly, what that means is that it's journalism with a great big attitude. So that's what you sense in All of Baba's Children, without my speaking for myself, but you sense my attitude to everything that I'm talking about. And then with creative nonfiction, the first person, the writer herself, becomes one of the characters that you're thinking about and talking about and revealing and so on, and even more so in Prodigal Daughter. Yeah. I continue to write what you call the mainstream books, which are what I would call my Canadian topics, mm-hmm. my New World topics. And I do want to mention that a year ago I published a book that's become very, very important to me as well, and is having an impact on other communities. And that's a book called The Frog Lake Reader.
Oh, right.
Which brought together everything that I could find in the literature of the Frog Lake Massacre, which occurred in 1885, so 125 years ago, in what is now Alberta. And what has haunted me about this is the realization that a mere 15 years later, my grandfather took out homestead title on land not so far from where all these events had happened. And I was suddenly very struck by the absence, including in All of Baba's Children, the absence of Aboriginal people mm-hmm. as the ones who were here before we were. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to kind of make amends for that by telling the story of what happened at Frog Lake. And most recently, I've written a play. Which was had a kind of a preview at the Festival of Ideas here in Edmonton a couple of weeks ago, in which I intend to develop further. So that keep in mind that for every book of Ukrainian exploration of Ukrainian identity, I'm also still identifying myself as a Canadian mm-hmm. with social issues on her mind.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And for which the Canadian literary world thanks you, and the readers thank you very much. And I thank you for sharing all this, Myrna, and for the work that you do. And thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us here in Oshawa.
Oh, thank you so much for asking me. I love talking about this stuff.
Yeah, great. Well, listen, I'm looking forward to talking more when you're here on the island.
Absolutely. We'll make a date.
Okay. Thanks, Myrna.
Okay. Bye-bye.